Thank you for your attention. I am Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago, and it's our honor on behalf of our Board of Governors to have such a distinguished group in this room in such an important topic that we're excited to dive into in a couple minutes. Thank you for being here. Thank you especially to those sponsors. I want to start by thanking Northwestern, obviously not only for bringing all the right folks, but bringing this to our attention, Jennifer Kundi and so many folks from your team came to us with this idea. And I'll be honest, this is a little off of the City Club's path, but it is wildly important to longevity is so important to everything, as you're going to learn today. The economy, the workforce, actual health, healthcare, universities, research, it just touches everything. And as a civic engagement organization, it's so important to be talking about this. So we're excited to be doing that. There's some brilliance in the room. I'm going to bring that down a bit by sitting right here and asking some questions that hopefully make this topic applicable to everybody, so that I figure if I can understand it, the rest of us can as well. Thank you to our sponsors. You know, we'd like to have these conversations, and it's because of all of you and your membership and your sponsorship that we're allowed to share this platform. So thank you to Ardmore Roderick. Thank you, Cozen O'Connor. Thank you, Illinois Economic Development Corporation, Magnify Strategies. Of course, I mentioned Northwestern University, ARP, AARP, our newest civic-level members. Thank you for your commitment. And then, of course, Cook County Health and Hospital System. Doctor and your team, thank you. We appreciate that that sponsorship. And we appreciate all of your time. You can be in a lot of places. It's a beautiful day in Chicago. To gather this incredible group of cross-sector folks is what City Club is all about. So I always like to mention, especially to help frame, you know, for the speakers, who they're speaking with and to, and we do want to make it a conversation. So I always like to give a sampling of kind of who's in the room. And so many are great public servants or former public servants. Dr. Ngozi Ezike helped lead Illinois through the pandemic. Dr. Simbo Ige, thank you, doctor, for your leadership in the Chicago Health. Dr. Eric McKaitis, Cook County Health. We are engaging more and more with Cook County Health on this very stage here, and always appreciate their point of view. John Atkinson is here from the Illinois EDC, and you're going to hear from Christy George, so I'll save that. Cheryl Thomas, always a great supporter of the City Club and all things civic in Chicago. Let's see who there's someone. Shirley Ryan is here. There's a woman here that has changed the face of the city, and she's one of my favorite people in the world. One of Chicago's greatest and most impactful civic leaders. You know, if you don't know her, you know her name from the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab. Her work from Pathways On for so many years has done so much, especially with regards to healthcare and this topic we're going to talk about today. So please welcome back to City Club, Shirley Ryan. It's an honor to have you here. As I mentioned, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to ask our panelists to join me, and I'll introduce you. If you all could come up, I think we talked about who's going to sit where. I'll sit right here. So join me as they're coming up. I'm going to introduce them briefly. Jay Bott is the managing director for the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions and co-dean of the Physician Leadership Academy. Dr. Francesca Duncan. Now, we're going in not the right order. So you're fine sitting. No, please. I'm sorry. Christy, how about you here? Doug J. Let's do that. Okay, I thought we had that. Dr. Francesca Duncan is the Thomas J. Watkins Memorial Professor of Reproductive Science and Associate Professor This shows that I don't know what I'm talking about on this. She's at Northwestern Feinberg School of Medicine. Dr. Doug Vaughn, the Irving Cutter Professor of Medicine Emeritus, also at Northwestern Feinberg School. And then, of course, Christy George, the president and CEO of the Illinois Economic Development Corporation. I'm going to dive in. So, welcome, and thank you all. We're surrounded by some incredible expertise. I'm going to try to draw that out of you, and as I said, make it applicable to the civic community. So if you could, say hello. I'd like to just go down the line, and if you do, within 1 minute, just a brief introduction of yourself and why, if we were all to leave this after going down the line, what would everybody want to know? What's the one thing you'd want everyone to know, why this is important to you, where you're going to focus, that'll help us frame the discussion moving forward? Christy, can we start with you?
Yep. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Christy George. As Dan shared, I'm the president and CEO of the Illinois Economic Development Corporation. We are the state's business attraction arm. We work very closely with the governor's office, our partners in the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, and so many other partners statewide. We call ourselves kind of one of the three-legged stool of Team Illinois. But I think to sum it up and to be kind of very quick, I would share that why this is important to me, why the longevity work that Northwestern is leading is important to me, and why I feel like it's important to kind of be on this stage and be part of this conversation, is that this represents the type of innovation that will lead us into the next generation for economic development in the life sciences. Life sciences is critical to our economy, and I'll talk a bit more about that in just a few moments. But Illinois wins when we make really big bets. We've made a huge bet in quantum, for example, and we are reaping returns on that as we have announcement after announcement of various quantum companies that are coming to this state. And we've already had such significant advancements in the life sciences. But this, to me, the longevity work that is happening represents the next big bet in life sciences where Illinois can lead.
Thank you. Doug, please.
Thanks very much. And thrilled to be here today to have an opportunity to talk to all of you. I'm Doug Vaughn. I'm the director of the POTUS Neck Longevity Institute at Northwestern. I'm a cardiologist by training. I was the chair of medicine at Northwestern for 15 years before I took on this job. So my career has made a remarkable transition from managing a faculty in a department with nearly 1,000 members to leading a small group that's really concept-focused on longevity. And we're in a remarkable moment in human history, and that's why I'm so excited about it and thrilled to be involved in our program at Northwestern and to talk about it with you, because in reality, the biology of aging has been remarkably demystified at this point in time. We know a lot about what drives aging. At the same time, we have the ability to measure biological age with a precision that never existed before. And when those two things hit, we have the opportunity to do something really special. We can start thinking about slowing down aging in the human species. That's what we're devoted to. That's what we think about all the time. That's what we're going to try to accomplish, and that's the story I'm going to tell you today.
Thank you, Jim. Hi, great to be here with you all. Thrilled. Thanks to Northwestern and the City Club. My name is Jay Bott. I lead our Center for Health Solutions at Deloitte, which is our thought leadership engine for life science and healthcare. I'm a practicing geriatrician on the south side of the Community Health Center. I'm a Christian and on the board of Cook County Health. And so I think about this a lot from the perspective of not only is this an issue that impacts everybody, but we have material opportunity to close the gap around what health span is for different populations and groups in different parts of the city. And when our research has shown that 85% of Americans live their life in good health. And what we found was what we know today can allow every American to materially gain 20 years of health span, so that's healthier, longer life, by 2040, living 95% of their life in good health. And so that, compounded by the fact of an affordability and cost crisis in healthcare, compounded by 4 million people turning 65, that doesn't even include accelerated aging by those under 65, and the technological advances that we just talked about, and all of that's coming together, that convergence, I think lifespan is about living longer, but health span is about how society functions. And this is, I think, an incredible opportunity to help us really be a light for the nation in Chicago And so it's going to take all of us to address this issue.
I'm also really excited to be here today. My name is Francesca Duncan. I'm an associate professor in OBGYN at Northwestern. I also co-direct our Center for Reproductive Science, and I direct our Master's in Reproductive Science and Medicine program. I also have an affiliate appointment with the Buck Institute in California, which is a very small research institute focused exclusively on aging research. I'm a reproductive biologist by training, so I'm an ovarian biologist, and I've applied this knowledge to truly understand mechanisms driving female reproductive aging. And in the conversation about health span and longevity, women are really in a unique position because our reproductive system is really one of the first to show overt signs of aging in the human body, starting when women are in their mid-30s and really reproductive function ceasing at menopause at around age 50. And so this aging is really happening in a time where we think we're chronologically young, which is true, but this really sets off a cascade of broad effects on general health. And so what I would like to have in this discussion is this concept of understanding that the ovary is much more than a fertility organ, but really an organ that's important for endocrine health and overall health. And we must consider aging trajectories in women if we truly want to have parity in the sexes in our health span.
As the other woman on this panel, I am here for that.
Great. So I'm picking up a lot of buzzwords that I think we're hearing more and more. Lifespan, biohacking, I've heard. What was super agers? Chronological. Francesca, you mentioned chronological, biological. Could we help define this? And maybe Doug might be the best at starting there. Let's have a shared sort of definition of what are we talking about? Is that super aging? Is that what is it that we're talking about, and why is it important? That's two questions, but maybe start with the
maybe definition. We'll start just by differentiating chronological age from biological age. All right, chronological age you're all familiar with. You register it every time you complete an orbit around the sun. When you have another birthday, you add another year to your chronological life. There's nothing you can do about it. I call it, it's cosmically indifferent. Doesn't care what you want, you're going to get that year. And we can't turn back.
No matter how old you say you are.
Yeah. You can play. That's not truth. Biological age is different. It really registers change as a function of time. It's not only a time-dependent phenomenon. It's also related to your genes and to your exposure. So it's aging-related changes in your body. And not everybody has the same trajectory. I could take you to Northwestern and walk you around in the hospital, and I can show you a lot of people that are aging rapidly. Their biological age is greater than their chronological age. Might be because they have a chronic condition, like chronic kidney disease or chronic HIV infection or other kinds of issues. We also have people, and I'm sure there are a lot of people in this room that are on the other end of the spectrum, that age more slowly. Your biological age is less than your chronological age. I see a lot of candidates for that right now, super agers. You know, you figured it out. Whatever it is that you do in your life, you've minimized your exposures, you've maximized your health, and you're going to live longer than you might have expected, you know, 20 years ago. So those are the two big differences. And biological age is, by definition, malleable. It's something that we can measure precisely, and now we think we can do something about it.
Okay, so why is it so important to be talking about it here at the City Club?
Because age is the most important risk factor for every disease we deal with in adult human beings. It's not just chronological age, it's really your biological age. So that drives morbidity as you live, and that drives the development of everything from cardiovascular disease to cancer to dementia to metabolic disorders. Age is the most important risk factor for all those things. So if we can slow down aging, even just a little bit, the idea is that we can extend your health span and give you more healthy, productive years. That's why it's important.
And what are the stats telling us now? Are we slow? Are we aging less rapidly? Who knows the numbers? And I know that so many of you study this. Is it fact? What are the numbers showing? And what are the reasons for that?
Life expectancy has been a little flat for a while. That hasn't changed very much. There's generally a gap in Americans between health span and lifespan of about 10 years. So we've got an opportunity there to work on something and to actually have an effect. But we're just at the beginning of this process. We're really just beginning to start to do the science and do the experiments and do the studies in human beings to see if we can extend the health span. But we've got a long list of things that might work, and we've got the reality is we have the tools now to be able to measure it in a realistic and accurate way, and it gives me confidence that we'll figure some things out.
I would just add that when we look at the environment and the circumstances that we are in as a world, as a nation, as an environment, you know, those all have an impact on our cognitive, our functional, our emotional well-being, and even data that shows that people over 50 who have a connection to purpose have a modifiable risk factor for mortality. So that purpose is also an important part of this. And so all of those things, I think we're in a time where there's so much impacting those that then accelerates aging. And then the acuity of what's showing up in our healthcare delivery systems, it's more complex. And so to me, that suggests that we've accelerated that. But from the data standpoint, I do think if we reorient, we can get to a different place.
I just wanted to sort of add to that. So also just to clarify some terminology, make sure everyone's on the same page. So we typically talk about lifespan as the number of years that you live, but health span is the number of years that you live in a healthy state. And so what we're trying to do is really close that gap between health span and lifespan. And I just want to shed light on this conversation, sort of where women's health fits in. So one of the things that exists is what's called the mortality paradox, which is that women on average live longer than men. And so there's this misconception that women have a longer health span than men. But actually, that's not true. And it turns out that women actually spend more time in frailty. So we have a poorer health span, even though we're living longer. And I'm happy to talk more about this. I love the ovary. But I actually think the ovary is, a prime reason why women are at that disadvantage. I would say, and Doug will probably talk a lot more about the efforts at the Longevity Lab, but as he said, we have metrics now where we can really define aging in a biological manner at high, high, high resolution. And we really need to make sure that we're understanding the trajectory of aging in women across their lifespan, because we have this much longer sort of aging window. And that's going to be really critical to understand baseline so we can figure out if any intervention is making a difference on our health span.
So we talk a lot about individuals and their actual health, and I appreciate that difference between lifespan and health span, healthy lives. Let's talk about that in a more macro sense, and maybe as people age and live longer, if that's what we're learning, what does that mean for the big picture? And maybe Christy, you could start with that, looking at it from sort of an economic standpoint. What does this mean for society as a whole?
Yeah, I think with chronic disease, there's kind of two ways that I'm thinking about it. One is like the current economy and where we've been and kind of understanding the data points surrounding that. And then from a future standpoint, where could we be and what are some of the indicators that we're looking at to kind of showcase how that could in fact impact our economy. So from a current standpoint, more broadly, we know that chronic disease, there was a study from the Milken Institute that reflected that chronic disease relatively costs, both indirect and direct, somewhere between $3 and $4 trillion in the entire United States, right? So roughly 20% of the GDP. When you break that down to Illinois, that's about $142 billion for us. So it's, again, a significant part of our GDP. It's roughly 17%, 18% of our GDP. And more recent studies are reflecting that those costs, those are growing. Those are not going down. Those are not going anywhere. So I believe there was a more recent study even just last year that reflected that those costs will grow for over the course of the next 15 years up to $47 trillion for the U.S., which is huge.
Yeah.
And when we take a step back and we think about what exactly does that mean and how exactly does that impact even our employer community, we look down to Illinois and how we look at lost productivity. We look at absenteeism, chronic absenteeism related to chronic disease. And that's everything from obesity to heart disease to high blood pressure to high cholesterol. It's all of those morbidities. And so we're thinking about it and thinking about how does that impact our employers. And what was found was that from a treatment perspective, medical treatment costs in Illinois will cost roughly $85 billion. But for lost productivity, for chronic absenteeism, that's $34 billion of our GDP. It's huge. And it's not just private employers that are facing this. It's our state employers that are facing this. So this is a huge economic issue that we are all seeing, that we are all dealing with. We aren't always paying attention to the, you know, actual hard figures and what that means from a macro perspective. But it's a very, very real issue. And we've talked, my colleagues here have talked a bit about the life expectancy. When we look at that from a local perspective, we know that there are huge age gaps in life expectancy. Right? If you live in the Loop, you are likely to live until you are age 82 or 83, right? If you live in West Garfield Park, you are very likely to live until you're about 66 years old. 20 jarring, yeah. Years age gap. It's huge. And we see similar disparities between, you know, high-income suburban communities versus rural communities. We see these disparities all over the state. And those are real world from a statewide perspective. Those are real issues. And we know that there are very many factors that go into life expectancy, but we do know that chronic disease burden is one of those very critical factors. So that's kind of where we are from our current perspective, and recognizing that this is research that could help us unlock some of those possibilities of how we could increase that life expectancy. That's real change to people with how much time they can spend with their families, how much time they could actually be in the workforce, how much time they could serve their communities. That's real, real impact and real change. And so when we're thinking about the future and what that means for our future economy, we know kind of currently we have roughly 700,000 people that are in the life sciences workforce right now within the state. About 93, 94,000 of those are right here in the Chicago area. It's pretty significant. We hold a large chunk here. Our entire workforce throughout the state is about 6.5 million. It's a pretty significant group of that is within the life sciences community. And what we are seeing is continued growth in life sciences projects. At Illinois EDC, we've had the great honor to be able to recruit a number of different businesses and work with our partners at the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity to encourage existing employers to expand. Just in the last few months, we've seen AbbVie announce two very large manufacturing projects in their North Chicago campus, close to $600 million in expansion for pharmaceutical production. We saw in Kankakee, just south of here, the largest project in state history, $1.5 billion expansion of their Kankakee facility for protein drug treatment and manufacturing. And so what we're seeing is that life sciences companies, they are doubling down, particularly in the Chicagoland area. We are seeing them do more. We are seeing real investment, real growth, real jobs. And these are all big bets that these companies are making. But they're making them based upon our ecosystem. Those investments did not happen in a vacuum. They did not happen in a silo. They all have academic partnerships. They all have very real innovation partnerships. And it's research and R&D, like what's happening here and what you're hearing about, that helps to fuel those types of investments. And if we don't continue to support that, we won't see those future expansions like the AbbVies, like the Abbotts, like the Takedas doubling down in our area. We have to support innovation like what's happening here.
It sounds to me, yeah. It sounds to me like Chicago and Illinois really is at the center of this universe. Is that the case? And we have university, obviously Northwestern. We have universities, hospitals, healthcare corporations. You mentioned AbbVie. We have Fermi, Argonne Labs. Should we be screaming that a little more from the mountaintop? Are we the center of the universe in this?
I think we'd like to be. I think we've had a very active discussion around this over the last several months, led by Lisa Dar and members of the of Governor Pritzker's administration. We had a large open table discussion in the fall that included industry, agriculture, government people, representatives from all the other major academic institutions in Chicago to talk about how we make Illinois the center for a health span extension in the world. And what, that means getting all those kind of groups together, talking about what, how we, what would be the plan, how would we bring that to be, and how do we get all those different contributors involved in a way that we can make a statement about doing something for our population. I think it's a real concept, and I think we can do it.
The only other thing that I would just add is that, like, as you listed out, you know, we have our incredible research institutions, world-class research institutions, amazing industry ecosystem. But what we also have is a spirit of partnership and collaboration that you don't always see in other states or between other university partners. And I think we saw that proof point, particularly coming out of COVID, when we saw a number of our universities partner with, whether it was Northwestern, working with University of Chicago, working with the University of Illinois system on the Chan Zuckerberg BioHub. That was a huge thing, $250 million investment in the West Loop that we were able to attract because our universities work together. That's not something that you see in other ecosystems. And so that is kind of part of the secret sauce and how we're able to attract more investment. But it's initiatives like this where we're seeing other university partners step up to the plate and be part of it.
I appreciate you saying that because City Club very much is about collaborating to, you know, just to better the city, to better the society. We had a panel here recently, and it was a collaboration on breast cancer research. And it was four different, you know, I think you all know of that work. And it's just a great reminder of how Chicago does work and how these different folks do come together to make it work better and to make Chicago right at the center of that. In your research, are you seeing that on the ground? Is that true? I mean, we understand when you're deep into research and development, you probably don't want to share a lot of what you're doing, right? I mean, until you're ready to write about it and put it out for the world. Is there sharing?
In this case, I don't think it's true. You know, our centerpiece of our approach to human aging is the Human Longevity Laboratory that we created at Northwestern. It's a facility where you come in and you go through a series of stations and measures. It takes about 2.5 hours to get all the testing done. And at the end of that period, we can give you a very precise estimation of your biological age, but includes functional and physiological measures, includes deep molecular profiling, includes a number of different AI-based tools, including an amazing tool developed by our colleagues at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab that can take a simple video of a human being walking, and it can be analyzed using their tool, but it can do every provide information on your get up and go time and your gait speed, and in a remarkably precise and informative way. And tools like that are scalable. You can do it anywhere if you have an iPhone, and they have open a system for analyzing the data. So we want to duplicate that laboratory in other places around the city, around the country, around the globe. And we can't do it by ourselves. There are way too many questions to ask. We can't enroll enough people. We already have a very solid foundation of a collaboration with Lorenzo Galone and his colleagues at UIC. We've helped them set up a laboratory over there. They're part of a network that we're building. We'd like to have a bigger network across the state to do that and provide this kind of information and opportunity for people not just in downtown Chicago but in Peoria too.
And I would just say, you know, obviously this is important, the partnerships between universities and industry, but it's also partnerships with the public. And I would say that what we've seen, you know, women's health is tremendously underfunded. I can't get up here and say that things are, you know, optimal for funding, but at the same time, women's health, and especially this space in ovarian aging and healthy aging in women is having a moment, and because people recognize the importance. And a lot of that has been the openness that we have in our state to be able to share our research, to talk to journalists who can then spread the word much broader than what one person can share. And so I would say that we have to continue to communicate to the public and take the work that we're doing and use our journalist resources and, people who can help us in that way. But we're having a moment, and if we don't capitalize on it, we will lose that. And so I think we need to really ride the wave and the momentum.
Yeah. Our operational mantra at the Podestack Longevity Institute, it concerns the idea and the concept that we want to figure out how to slow down aging in people that are disadvantaged because of chronic conditions and circumstances. And that's a lot of people in the world. We're not too interested
in the city too, yeah.
We're not interested in figuring out how to keep Putin or Jeff Bezos, how to make them immortal. That's not our thing.
Thank you.
Okay. We're really interested in the 99%.
A couple other names I think we're not going to mention.
We're interested in the 99% of people in the world that need our help, and particularly people that are disadvantaged for some reason.
Jay, go ahead.
So I think when we look at the span of where money is going on this issue, and I completely agree, we've got to think about the access, the drivers of health, the differences as an important thing to address. But nearly $9 billion in 2024 into this space. Age tech and cognitive health, $311 million. Therapeutics and drug discovery, $2.1 billion. Cellular regeneration, $2.4 billion. Consumer diagnostics and care, $3.5 billion. And so you see, that's growing. And this is a moment of wearables and digital and those things, metrics, and how do you make sense of that? So what we're also seeing on the science is that there's a lot out there, but a lot of it doesn't have the strong evidence yet that maybe it's suggesting it might be there. And so I think that when we think about this in a future of health orientation, that we've got to drive prevention, early detection, and action, and health promotion. And so how do we organize a system around that? When you do that, our recent data around safeguarding Medicare shows that we can save Medicare $500 billion. By 2040, and the system $2.2 trillion. And that requires the kind of work that we're seeing in different parts of this city in pockets. But how do we do that scale? And that goes to some of the systems, policy, and environmental changes we need to get to that action. So you have, what we did in our, we say, three concurrent waves, where we delayed elements of mortality, so life expectancy increase. And now we're at a place of metabolic and other actions to address chronic disease, reduce inflammation, and the biology of aging that we just talked about, where the N of one becomes something you get at. Think sickle cell, think gene editing, all these technologies. And then we'll get to the place about, this is the frontier of expanding biological limits. So artificial organs, regeneration, this flip on, it's not about the biology of aging more, it's how do you actually help people thrive as they're living longer. And then the societal part of this is think about caregiving. So if people are healthier, then what does it do for caregivers? Many unpaid caregivers around this country. And then what does that then do with the workforce? What does that do with financial elements? So you even think about retirement planning. I mean, this is a domino effect of an issue. But if we get health right, I think we can figure out a number of these other things. And there's one approach called compression morbidity. So you put people are in poor health for a short amount of time when you drive towards better health and earlier detection.
I just want to, I resonated in terms of these phases, but also where resources are placed and making sure they're placed sort of at the right time, right place. And as a basic scientist, focusing on the biology of aging, what is really exciting is that we are seeing so much more that we understand about the mechanisms of aging. But how do we make sure that those findings in a laboratory get to patients. And as a researcher in this space, I'm realizing that that path is actually not so clear. So if you have a molecule or you have a device, you can get that into industry or venture capital. But it has to be at quite a late stage to get there. And I think really we need to think about mechanisms to invest in those really early stage biology of aging that has a lot of promise and figure out a way to bring those forward. So I think that's something that should be part of that discussion.
We're clearly learning so much. And you mentioned, Doug, about watching someone walk and how quickly you can learn from that. How is AI, artificial intelligence, and the rapid acceleration of technology, how is that going to affect what we're learning and the results?
It's already influencing what we do every day. And even in our laboratory here, on campus, we use AI-based clocks in multiple ways to give us a registration of your biological age. Let me give you a couple examples. We have you look in a little camera, snap a picture of your retina. We work with a group in New Zealand that have analyzed hundreds of thousands of human retinal images. Within a few nanoseconds, we get back your age and tells us about your risk for things like kidney disease, interestingly enough. We do a 12-lead electrocardiogram. I'm a cardiologist. I can read an electrocardiogram. I can't tell your age. We work with a group in Brazil. They've analyzed millions of electrocardiograms using machine learning, and they've got a tool that can analyze your electrocardiogram and tell you your age and your gender and your risk for cardiovascular event over the next 7 years. And we get that back in a few seconds. And those are tools that cost pennies to operate, almost nothing. So there are lots. There's almost a new AI-based clock that appears on the stage or is reported about in the literature every week. It just, you know what, it makes it scalable, it makes it affordable, it makes it available to everybody to have these kind of things done.
I would say that I think AI is an incredible opportunity to shape discovery, and earlier to the point of talking about how do we get discovery earlier, also around personalization. So this point about how do you get people the information they need at the moment they can act? So when they've had a family member experience a health issue, when they're going through a transition, when they have something that emerges in their life where they're like, oh, no, I got to take it. Someone in my family has cancer. Or any of those moments that drive earlier detection. And then I think this idea of digital biology is going to take shape in the sense that, you know, we have the science, but AI will drive the engineering and computational effects to really help us understand this biology of aging at a very, very close level. I mean, and there are examples of this, you know, that we see around reducing inflammation and trying to help the mitochondria work better. So all these parts of our body that we already have, how do we help them do their job and have the capacity rather than being depleted in times of inflammation or stress or so forth? So I think it's an incredible opportunity. And then the one other thing I'll say is very practical. You know, one example is that the ACA covered screening mammograms for women, right? And when you have, and I deal with this as a someone taking care of women in my clinic, where if it comes back indeterminate or comes back with something that requires diagnostic mammogram and ultrasound, some women have to pay out of pocket for it. So then they delay care, or they don't understand what to do, or navigating the friction. So this other thing is, like, I think AI will help us navigate the friction in the right places that make it easier to do the right thing, to help drive health span. And I think that's a critically important area, too. Because there's the high tech, then there's the low tech. And I think we got to do more of that as well. And then the drivers of health that impact people's ability to do those things.
I just want to double-click on something that both Jay and Dr. Ron have talked about, which is that piece on accessibility is huge. And if you think about where we're seeing more of our health provider companies moving and the types of investments that they're doing, for example, Advocate Health, they had announced a $1 billion investment in Chicagoland, right? Just earlier this week, they did their groundbreaking on a $300 million hospital. It's a huge investment. It's incredible. We're grateful for it. But the other $700 million, that they're utilizing those funds on and that investment, that's not in the, you know, the walls of that hospital. It's really within their community infrastructure and the clinics that they are working to stand up on the south side of Chicago, in addition to some of the workforce investments that they're doing. And the whole goal of that initiative is really to be more accessible to the community that they're in. And it's not making patients go into a hospital to receive treatment, but to meet patients where they're at, meet the community where they're at. And so you think about some of this technology, and Dr. Vaughn, you said it well, about how these AI tools can be much more accessible. Think about how these AI tools could be in those clinics, in different communities all throughout the city of Chicago, and what that could do to the average person when they're thinking about all of the comorbidities that they have and what's their treatment plan going
to
be.
Not having to wait 6 months to get an appointment to test.
Exactly.
And there's so much of that work, as we mentioned, Dr. Ezeke is here, Dr. McKaitis, Cook County Health, and safety net hospitals. There's always room to do more, but we're in a great place in Chicago and Illinois for this work, for these studies. I have a few more questions. We have only a few minutes. We have a lot of really smart people in the room. So if Caleb or somebody's around, I'd love to have a question or two from the audience in a minute. So I'll give you a minute to think of those. But one question, a burning question that I have, a personal point of privilege, how old am I going to live to be? I'm just trying to plan my vacation and retirement.
How old do you want it to be?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a turning the tables. I want to have a better quality of life for longer, right? We're calling that the health span, not lifespan.
I think you can get a fix on it by understanding your biological age and maximizing your gap between your biological age and your chronological age. It doesn't have to be huge. Just a year or two apparently makes a big difference in putting off the onset of aging-related morbidity or disease. So this is next wave of preventive medicine. You do a lot of things now to keep yourself healthy, but you're screening for disease. You have a colonoscopy. You get your blood pressure measured. You get your cholesterol measured. Those are all specifically disease-oriented tests to protect yourself. Now you're asking a question just in general. What's my biological age? What is it? Well, we have the tools to be able to tell you that. And if you can optimize your gap, where you're like minding the gap when you're in London, maximize that gap, then you can almost certainly predict that you'll have a healthier lifespan.
There is a question from somebody, and I know John has a question. There was a question about, it was Jim Turman, I think, mentioned the weight loss drugs. And obviously there's a lot of buzz around that these days. How is that factoring in to your studies, your findings? Or is it too soon to know?
I mean, there's no doubt that they're making an impact in people's lives. They are, reducing cardiovascular risk and helping people address the metabolic issues that then also help address weight loss. What we don't know is the long-term effects, but we do know that we've used some semblance of these kinds of medications for quite a long time. It's not that GLP-1s are new. The formulation and the way that it, in this particular case, is altered some. But so we can extrapolate from there that we know what some of those long-term effects are. So that's one way I'd put it. And then I'd say that, again, it goes to like who's going to be your health span Sherpa. You know, you can't, it's not just the medicine, it's the wraparound support, the community health worker, the others that are going to help you drive that behavior change and sustain it, that will help you along with the medicine. Hopefully over time some people won't need it. But I think they're, yeah.
The one thing that's consistently shown to be effective in extending the lifespan of all animal species is caloric restriction. And those drugs will make you eat less, no doubt about it. I'm not going to, you all are friends, so I'll tell you, we had key leadership from Eli Lilly visiting us on campus all day yesterday because we want to partner with them. We want to test their drugs in our longevity lab. They're a little nervous about it. I mean, they get on, they're doing quite well, as I understand.
And we haven't talked about sleep, which is a significant impact.
But, do their drugs actually turn back the clock on people? We don't know that data. And is it Is it systemically? Is it only metabolically? Does it have some deleterious or unexpected effects in systems like muscle that you don't want to have? We'd like to help them sort that out, but they are clearly putting their toe in the water around longevity, but there's no FDA pathway to get a drug approved for longevity right now. We're sort of in the place that we were 20 years ago when there was no pathway to get a drug approved for obesity, and I made that point to them. Yeah. You know, you pulled the genie out of the bottle before, and look what happened. Well, maybe the time is to think about longevity or health span, and you have the potential. They certainly have the resources to be able to do something about it.
Great. I know John Atkinson, if you could introduce yourself, and hopefully that mic works.
Hello. Hi. I'm John Atkinson with Illinois Economic Development Corp. Two questions, actually. One is related to mental health, and does your research contemplate mental health and the impact on aging, number one? And then secondly, if I came into the clinic and had the biological age assessment, are there then treatment recommendations that you make based upon that? What if my biological age is shorter than my chronological age?
I can jump in on the mental health piece, which is incredibly important. We did some research around the cost of inequities with mental health and the connection to this work around healthy aging, and it has got an impact. And that's what I mentioned earlier about this notion of physical function, cognitive function, emotional well-being, purpose. The emotional well-being, cognitive, physical is all then connected to mental health. And now with the GLP-1s, we're also seeing the neural-gut connection. But mental health, in terms of also downstream, in terms of stress and inflammation, has an impact on biological aged.
The first study we're actually doing in the laboratory is a pragmatic, prospective clinical trial of a stress reduction program in people. It's an online tool developed by my colleague Judy Moskowitz. It's been used by tens of thousands of people around the country. And so we're bringing in people in. They're agreeing to participate in a clinical trial, and they take this, they undergo a series of exercises over several weeks. We all know that stress makes us age, right? Yeah, we kind of have a common understanding. But if you de-stress or if you enhance your mood, does it turn the clock back the other way? We're asking that question right now, and we have the tools to be able to do it. So we're very interested in things like this. This is scalable. It's highly affordable. It's a free tool online that people can use. But that's the kind of things that we're thinking about. And, you know, if you come in to the laboratory and you have your biological age measured and you have maybe you have some concerns about one thing or another, you get some recommendations, mostly around contemporary ideas of hygiene, exercise, diet, sleep, avoiding, you know, toxic substances of all kinds, those kinds of things. But we don't have specific drugs that we assign or prescribe today because there's just no data around that.
We have time, I think, for one more.
Hi. So I'm curious if you're familiar with Dr. Walter Longo's data on fasting and longevity from USC, or just the relation to fasting and longevity in general.
Fasting is a very popular subject, and it's one way of actually managing weight and caloric restriction, and it certainly has some short-term beneficial effects. I think that it's challenging to do that over the long term, but it certainly speaks to the possibility that there are lots of things that we can do that can improve our overall metabolism, improve our metabolic efficiency, and keep us healthier. So, but that belongs in a category of related things that are about reducing calories.
And one other point I'll make overall is that people are disproportionately impacted by different things. So even for me as a South Asian, I have genetic lipoprotein little A risk. And so I check that. You check it once, and then you do something different depending on what comes back. Similar to Alzheimer's, you have these biomarkers that can help you potentially take different action earlier on that then has an impact downstream.
And I saw two hands at the same time. Shirley, of course, please.
A wonderful panel. Thank each of you. It's really informative. Francesca, you said you bring up a topic which hasn't been discussed a lot. And what vehicles would you use to get it out to the public?
You mean to get information out? So I think one thing that we need to do is, again, communicate. So I get contacted by journalists quite a bit. And I think as a scientist in a lab, it's out way outside of our comfort zone to talk to journalists or, you know, be on the news or be on the radio. So I think as scientists, we need to do a better job of making those relationships, taking advantage of it, learning how to communicate to different populations. We're really good at speaking in jargon. We're not so good at explaining our words to a lay audience. So I think that's one way. I also think we need to communicate by writing in ourselves, writing op-eds, being able to inform the public about what's up and coming in the science so they're educated. So I'll give you an example. I am very interested in what's happening in the post-reproductive ovary. For a long time, I think we all assume that after menopause, this organ is not doing anything. But that, in fact, is probably not true. And the reason why it's probably not true is because we now have new technologies, new scientific technologies, where we can look at organs at single-cell, single-molecule resolution and truly understand what they're producing. And so data that's emerging is that this organ is not quiescent, and it's probably doing quite a bit. And so as women are living decades post-menopause, we need to understand what's happening there. And so being at the forefront of new ideas like that and writing them and putting them out into the public so people can get excited and interested, I think is really important. I also think training the next generation to be our champions and also, you know, spread their work is also really critical. So I think it's a whole village, as you're saying, and state, and we're in a great state to be able to do this.
And I would just add to Francesca's comment that there's incredible opportunity for unmet need for women's health. And there's business need. And we part of the issue is there's not the data from the research in order to be able to address some of those. And we did a study that showed women pay $15.4 billion more out of pocket and for healthcare costs. And so it is also a system and a design that it's not one size fits all.
I would also just share, just tacking on to both of those perspectives, that there's also opportunities to pursue kind of change through legislation and policy advocacy. And I think communicating through the press, communicating to individuals is critically important, but it's also critically important to communicate priorities to our legislature. We have a very active legislature in Illinois, and certainly
especially busy with, these days.
Yeah, well, thank God, session's over. but I would also say our congressional delegation has also been incredible advocates, particularly Senator Tammy Duckworth. And so I would just say that it's important to communicate across all of those fronts.
Okay, I promise one more.
Thanks. Thanks to all of you. It's really amazing to hear all of you. I have tremendous confidence in the biomedical future, as well as medical technology and medical science. And the one thing I did hear all of you allude to in one way or another, I should introduce myself. I'm sorry. I'm Michelle Hirsch. I'm the Chief Planning Officer for the Illinois Multi-Sector Plan for Aging, also known as Engaging Illinois. And as far as legislature, community, caregiving, all of that is part of the multi-sector plan. And so instead of a question, I have a request that all of you fully engage in this process. It is a whole of government, whole of society approach, and all of you have so much, and the whole room have so much to contribute in that respect. So I please get involved. Just look up Engaging Illinois. The governor just signed an executive order to that effect, actually two of them, very recently. So thank you.
Thank you.
You must have come to City Club before. You know, we always like to close with what now? What do we leave here with? What do we? I think we now understand this so much better. We're a couple minutes over, and Shirley prompted it by saying, you know, getting the message out and how if there's one or two things that we haven't gotten to yet. I made it a point to mention who is in this room. If we all go out in our daily lives, how can we help your work as a civic community
anything that hasn't been mentioned? I'm not looking for you to repeat anything. I know we all want to get back, but is there anything that hasn't been mentioned where we, this incredible group of people and the thousands that watch the videos online, can do in their daily work to help this effort?
I have something just very simple. Talk about it. Just please talk about it. Learn. I mean, you've heard a lot today, but look up the YouTube videos, look up the information on Northwestern's website, and share it with your family and with your friends. It is very critical work, and the more that we can spread the word, the better all of us will be.
Great.
I agree with sharing the word, and then so what's some one thing you can do now in the near term and then in the long term from where you sit on this issue? And then, we have a Medicaid issue that's looming, too, and that may impact the ability for folks to have health span. And so there's opportunities, I know, to get involved there. So I'd ask for that, too.
I think also another thing to sort of appreciate, walk away understanding that aging is not a binary event. It's not that you're young and then you're old. And it's not also a linear process. So we're learning more and more now that there's particular points in your lifetime that are more vulnerable to aging. Trajectories of aging are different depending on the organ that you're talking about and also depending on your sex. And so we really need to make sure that we really understand the complexities of this whole process so that we can extend health span.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. We are a couple minutes over, but at City Club, we're committed to getting this these messages out. We do this on a whole host of fronts. But to hear this from the real experts, it was incredible to be able to extract some of this knowledge from you all. I hope you all feel the same. It's thank you again to Northwestern. Thank you to each of our panelists, not only for being here today, but for all the work that you're all doing every day to make our city, our state, and our society better. You're all welcome back. We have some great programs coming up. We've got Attorney General Kwame Raoul on June 9th, Chicago School Board status and eventual election on June 30th. And then we're going to have some fun summer programs coming up that will be a little more maybe on the river, maybe outside, maybe a cocktail or two. So hopefully you all will come back and join us for more of these discussions. But for today, thank you to you four and to all those who are taking.